Let's call this meeting to order. Wednesday, August 29th, 2012.
The time is time for surfing.
Time is 6:06. Please turn off your cell phones and put them on silent.
You're not listening to us.
John Jay is complaining you're not listening to me. Okay, this is our third legislative budget hearing. Roll call, please.
Alex. Here. Ammons. Anderson.
Here.
Binzel. Berkson.
Here.
Betts.
Here.
Carter. Cowart. Esri.
Here.
Holderfield.
Here.
James.
Here.
Jay.
Here.
Kibler.
Here.
Kurtz.
Here.
Langenheim.
Here.
Maxwell.
Here.
McGinty.
Here.
Michaels.
Here.
Mitchell. Mosier. O'Connor.
Here until 9 o'clock.
Petrie.
Here.
Quisenberry. Richards. Rosales.
Here.
Schrader. Weibel.
Here. We have a quorum. Seek approval of the agenda and addendum.
So moved
by Mr. James, second by Mr. Rosales. I would like to see a motion to add administrative services as number G at the bottom, with the exception of ROE. Moved by Mr. Aaron, second by Mr. Kurtz. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Main motion. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Okay, first up is Nursing Home Fund by Scott Gina.
Good evening, everyone. I've got a short presentation, and we'll answer any questions about the nursing home's budget. First thing is the revenue assumptions. And basically, as in past years, it's all census-driven. Our Medicare census and the budget has been increased by 4.3 residents, and it's an increase from the current year-to-date average of 15.1 and increase it to 19.4. I made no significant changes to Medicaid or private pay, except the Medicaid was dropped by 0.4 and private pay was dropped by 0.5. So the overall census increased by 3.4 from 195.7, which again is the current year-to-date as of through the end of May census, with an estimate target of 199.1. The occupancy rate at 195.7 is 80.5%. At 199.1, the occupancy rate increases to 82%. We have 243 licensed beds. So we have been running with what I would consider a low occupancy or lower occupancy than what we can handle. In terms of the rates, because obviously census determines half of the revenue, the other half or the other part of the equation is what our rates are. Medicaid rates are frozen until January of 2014. I'll talk a little bit more about that at the end of my presentation, but that's mandated by the states with the passage of the SMART Act with the current budget year. Private pay rates were increased by 5%. Medicare rates are increased by 1.8%, which is consistent with the Medicare rules that were published earlier in this month of August, and they will be implemented on October 1st of 2012. So that was actually a welcome surprise, because when I first was going to be doing this budget, I was going to assume that Medicare rates would be flat in the current year, or for 2013. So the federal fiscal year starts on October 1st, so the rates actually start on that date. So this table summarizes our census going back to 2010. And so in the budget, again, what we have for private pay is 67.3, and that's a little less than what was budgeted last year. Medicaid is 112.4, and again, it's consistent with our current Medicaid census. So you can see our Medicaid has gone up over the last 3 years. Medicare is budgeted at 19.4, which again is an increase of 4.3 from the current year-to-date census, but it is less than what was budgeted last year. And again, our overall census target is 199.1. Last year, we budgeted at 190, and again, our current Year-to-date average census is 195.7. And as of today, our census was either 200 or 201. So we've actually had hit at one point earlier this month, 213. And we've been pretty steady at 200 for the last 2 or 3 weeks. So that's a welcome change. The payer mix for the budget is 34% private pay. And again, compared to our year-to-date at 35%, it's not much of a change. Medicaid's at 56% versus 58% currently. And again, compared to 2010 and 2011, yes, our Medicaid payer mix has increased. Medicare at 9.7, which again is higher than the year-to-date of 8%, but is less than what was budgeted for the payer mix for last year or for this current year. So why did I increase the Medicare? And it's something that we have talked about previously, which is the introduction of the respiratory therapy program and the ongoing discussions that we have with the renal dialysis. Now, I understand completely that the renal dialysis has not – I don't have to go ahead for the renal dialysis, but in terms of the budget, I basically made an assumption that it would be implemented, and we'll see what happens after we get the RFPs. So with the tentativeness of renal dialysis, I felt that I was conservative in increasing the Medicare by only 4.3. And I can make the argument that just with respiratory therapy, we could see the Medicare census go up by that amount. And I'm also basing that not just on a build it will come kind of deal, but we've had conversations with the hospitals and the discharge planners in terms of how they would see a respiratory therapy program being implemented at the nursing home, and we have received very positive responses so far. So I believe that that program by itself will be able to increase our Medicare census and probably our overall census. The other thing with respiratory therapy that I didn't include in the budget is that we have also the opportunity to increase our overall length of stay for each of our Medicare residents by keeping them qualified for Medicare for a longer period of time than we currently do. Because typically what we do now is as soon as they're done with physical therapy, they come off of Medicare. Respiratory therapy is considered a skilled service that will allow that resident to remain under Medicare. And so if we can collect $460 for an extra 2 or 3 days versus $180 for private pay or $150 for Medicaid, obviously we're much better off. The other thing that's not included in the budget is the fact that respiratory therapy can also increase the specific Medicare rate for a particular resident. We have 66 different Medicare rates that a resident could have, and they could change on day 15, day 30, day 60, day 90. Respiratory therapy allows us the opportunity to increase from a lower paying rate to a higher paying rate. So when I said that the average rate was increased by 1.8%, with respiratory therapy, I could arguably increase that by a higher percentage, but I did not do that in the budget. In addition, when our Medicaid reimbursement system is put into effect on January of 2014, respiratory therapy can help us increase our overall Medicaid rate that we receive from the state. So, but again, I can't do anything about that until those rates are unfrozen. Yes, Patsy.
Just a clarification. You're saying the Medicaid rates will change in 2014, but I thought on your slide you said it was the Medicare that was changing in 2014.
Oh. Medicare will increase by 1.8%. This October, Medicaid is frozen.
Oh, sorry, I flipped it around. Sorry. Thank you.
So other issues that we're dealing with right now that could provide additional revenue and census opportunities. Hospitals are now actively working to reduce their rehospitalization rate. And what that basically is starting on October 1st, Medicare will start penalizing hospitals who readmit residents within 30 days of discharge from the hospital. And if their rehospitalization rates are above a certain standard, starting October of this year, their Medicare reimbursement will be decreased by 1%. Next year, it goes up to 2%, and the subsequent year, 3%. So now the hospitals have a financial incentive to work with the nursing homes to try to reduce the residents that go back to the hospital in less than 30 days. And so we've been working with both hospitals. We've been in conversation, especially with Carle Clinic, but also with Provena, to start working to try to reduce the rehospitalization rates. In addition, starting in January of 2013, the state of Illinois is rolling out a what's called a dual-eligible Medicare-Medicaid managed care program in central Illinois, which includes Champaign County. And basically, that will put together both Medicare and Medicaid into a managed care plan. So if you have Health Alliance, that plan will now cover both Medicaid and Medicare payments to the nursing home. And that's something that we're starting to work, again, with Health Alliance and the other plans to work with that issue. But what it means is that we have to improve the medical management of our residents. And our residents are much more fragile, much more medically complex than they were 10 years ago. And so what we've been working on for these last few months is trying to improve the medical management, as well as the nursing care in the nursing home, because we have to do a better job so we can keep them in the nursing home and we don't send them back to the hospitals unless it's necessary. The expense assumptions. Wages were increased by 1%. That is consistent with the collective bargaining agreement, and that includes both bargaining unit and non-bargaining unit employees. Health insurance costs were increased by 10%. IMRF costs by 2.28% or 2.3%. And in general, non-labor costs were increased by 1%, except for some specific areas. And I'll go through those now. In activities, I actually added 1.5 FTEs, basically to target our Alzheimer's unit. We have two Alzheimer's units, Unit 4 and Unit 5. Unit 5 is a locked unit. Unit 4 is an unlocked unit that has our lower acuity, or if you want to call it non-wandering early-stage Alzheimer's residents. That's been a problem area, and when I took a look at our payroll reports, it clearly showed that we didn't provide enough activities. So I'm adding staff into that area, and hopefully it will reduce incidents and issues that we have on the surveys, hopefully in the future. Our agency or nursing contract costs was reduced by 8%. From $652,000 to $600,000. And that's probably a conservative. I probably, if I wanted to, I could have cut that by more. In terms of the statistics, in January, our agency use for CNAs was roughly 250 or 256 shifts in that month in January were picked up by agency staff. In June, that number was reduced to just over 130. So we've cut it in more than half. Now, hopefully that will continue, and the goal is hopefully is to eliminate contract nursing at some point in time, but we have made a significant impact on reducing agency over the last 3 or 4 years, and we continue to do that through the current year. Administrative professional services added $264,000 to that budget line item. The administrator's salary in last year's budget was included in their labor expenses and was basically moved from there into administration. In addition, I added the dialysis fees and the dialysis transporter fees that were in the pro forma that was presented to you earlier this month. Also in administration, we have IPA licensing fees, and that basically is the bed tax that was increased back in April, and that adds $376,000 in expenses. But the good news is that our Medicaid rate back in April was increased by a little bit more than the $376,000 on an annual basis. I think the net effect is we gain about $30,000 to $50,000 on an annual basis, and that is because we have a high Medicaid mix. Depreciation expense was increased by $12,000 to account for the capital investment in the dialysis program, and physical therapy professional services was increased by $114,000 to include the costs of the respiratory therapists. So overall, non-labor expenses were increased by $766,000 with these new fees in there, or new costs. But I also found expense reductions that were what I believe are easily attainable in non-labor expenses. So what I did, since this is the first time I'm going through your budget for the nursing home, I took a look at a three-year history from 2010 to 2012 and identified a number of areas where I felt very comfortable that we could reduce our expenses. The first one is environmental services, waste disposal and recycling. We're going to reduce the amount of pickups with our waste services, and it's going to reduce, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I believe it was about a 20% decrease in that line item. Maintenance supplies was another area. Maintenance building, repairs and maintenance was reduced. Nursing supplies, we belong to a purchasing group called HPSI. And every quarter they come and do an audit of all our invoices, I shouldn't say all our invoices, but most of our invoices, and they compare it to their contract rates and to see if there are cost-saving opportunities. And they pointed out in these particular items, oxygen, incontinence supplies, pharmacy, and over-the-counter drugs, that by using some of their vendors and change some of our purchasing behaviors, that we could incur some more additional cost savings. Nursing Medicare medical services, that is for our Medicare residents that require outpatient services that we have to incur the costs, and that's required by Medicare rules. So if our Medicare reimbursement averages $460 a day, we had a situation where we had a resident who required outpatient radiation therapy. We had to bear that cost. And that was, I don't remember the total amount, but I believe it was about $20,000. So that's one item that's not going to be there next year, and one of the reasons why I decreased that budget line item. Nursing professional services. For over a year, we have not been able to fill an assistant care plan position, and so we had to use a staffing agency to provide that service. On a 12-month basis, it was costing us about $153,000. We have finally hired a person for that position at roughly $55,000. So I basically took, I think, roughly $80,000 out of that line item. So roughly I had a total reduction of $252,000 in non-labor expenses. So the budget that you have in front of you, to summarize here on the right column, we have operating revenues of $14.6 million, operating expenses of $15.7 million, plus non-operating income, of which that $1.04 million is predominantly the taxes, the property taxes. I am budgeting a net loss of basically $99,000, just under a $100,000 loss. Now, if you add back our depreciation expense, which is about $742,000, we should see a positive cash flow of roughly $642,000 for the year. So, in terms of operating expenses, what we're going to be targeting now and going into the new year is, again, to try to eliminate agency as much as possible. We're also going to work on employee retention and to reduce our turnover. I mean, some of the statistics say that for every employee that we turn over, it costs us $3,000, $4,000, $5,000. And we have a very high turnover rate. And it's one of the statistics that we're going to start looking at on a monthly basis, and I'll be reporting to the operating board. Labor management relations. I think we have made significant strides in improving the relationship between our union representatives and management, and we're going to continue to do that because we do need to partner with them as we move forward to try to improve the quality of care and the quality of our nursing services in the nursing home. Scheduling is another issue. It's been a big issue both for management and for the staff that we have been working on. Workers' comp is another issue. One of the statistics that was presented to me by the staff a couple of months ago is that we've been averaging anywhere from 200 lost hours a month to 300 or 400 in any given month, just over the last 6 months. So we just had IPMG come in to meet with us, and one of the things that we're doing is that we've purchased two lifts, because we're short on a couple of lifts. And so what happens there is on a couple of our units, the CNAs, because they don't want to either go to the next unit to get a lift or they don't have the time to do it, are not using the lifts to move residents. And that can't happen. We basically need to have a no-lift policy, but if we don't have the lifts, how can we implement that policy? So we purchased two lifts about a month, month and a half ago, and I believe it cost us about $6,000. So hopefully we can get workers' comp costs down and get our people back to work. That's going to help with our staffing and also reduce our agency costs. Looking ahead, despite all the things that we've been talking about with budget issues, with the state, with Medicare, there's significant changes going on in the healthcare arena as well as long-term care, which I believe provides us with opportunities to increase our Medicare volume and our overall census. This dual eligible managed care program, if we improve our medical management, it will increase our census. And I believe we're also ahead of the game compared to some of the other nursing homes. In terms of reducing readmissions, the feds have put out what's called an INTERAC program that's been available for about 4 years. We implemented that program well over a year ago, and it's specifically geared to reduce hospital readmissions. We've been working to improve our medical management, talking with our providers in the facility, our nurse practitioners, and over the next few months, hopefully we'll see significant changes there. Now, the implementation of the new Medicaid reimbursement system that was delayed until January 2014, it was originally supposed to be implemented on July of this year. If it was implemented, it actually would have increased our Medicaid reimbursement by at least $500,000 a year. But the only reason I could tell you that's been told to me is that politics played into this, because there are certain nursing homes in the Chicago area that are going to lose money with this new reimbursement system. So I've been told that they are fairly strong politically and was able to get a concession from the state to delay the implementation of the new Medicaid rates until 2014. So we are working with our nursing home associations to see if new legislation could be introduced in January to try to implement the new system before January 2014. But come January 2014, the new system will be implemented, and we will see an increase in our Medicaid reimbursement at that time. And I will take questions.
Go ahead, Diane.
First, I wondered if you had a copy of these items, because it really wasn't. Some of the items in your presentation are not in our packets, and therefore some of the numbers that I saw up here didn't quite match up with what was in my packet.
And you have to apologize. You know, one of the things that I really didn't think about until you asked that question is I will send you copies of these slides, and I also will send you a copy of the write-up that I did for the operating board, which kind of coincides with the slides.
Yeah, because somehow the numbers aren't the same on a lot of them.
Well, they should be the same.
Well, you know, you said 14 million, it's 15 million on the one, like the revenue, you had it 14 point something on your slide, and it's 15 something in here, and there were some items that you said. And then they said there, you said there were some items that were going to gain income, and I don't really have as much of that when I'm looking at my general fund summary here. And then I had a $1.1 million increase in expenses based on what my summary says here on page 7. So I'm trying to match the numbers up with what you have. Yeah. Yeah, and so I don't.
And quite frankly, I'm not covering every single line item. And I'm just hitting the big ticket items
right
on that.
Right, but the expense item matched. See your budget, 1572 on
right.
13.
So
that matches, but your operating revenue doesn't.
You have to add that 14.58 plus the 1.04 under non-operating income, which is right here. This number here plus this number, and I think it should tie.
Yes.
Okay. Other questions? Mr. Alex.
Just real briefly, where are the payments to MPA accounted for in the budget?
It is under professional services.
Okay, that's what I was guessing. And that includes other services as well, right?
Yeah, there's professional services in almost every department. So
professional services administration would be the,
yes,
the MPA?
Right.
And does that include the new contract for compliance?
Yes.
That's in that line item.
Yes.
And just a question about the respiratory therapy. You mentioned in your summary that we got that there are no capital costs associated with starting that up. What do you have to do in order to be able to start that? Do you have to add additional staff? Do you have to add additional classes of skills? What would you need to do in order to implement that?
The main investment will be the hiring of a respiratory therapist.
Okay, so it will be a specific individual.
Yes.
Who will be an employee.
It will be an employee of our rehab company.
Oh, okay.
That's providing that service.
Okay, so it'll be a third party.
Yes.
It's a third party that provides, mm-hmm, the service.
I believe we have to do a little bit of rehab remodeling too, don't we?
Not for respiratory.
Not for respiratory. Yeah.
And is that a situation where we pay that individual salary and then realize benefit from providing the treatment, or do we pay the rehab company on a fee-for-service basis?
It will be a straight hourly rate for on-site, on-premises time for that respiratory therapist.
Okay, so if they're not, if at some point the demand for the service is lower, we're not paying, we don't have a sunk cost in that salary line.
No, basically the respiratory therapist hours will be cut.
Okay.
And vice versa.
Okay, thank you.
Stephanie.
Thank you, Scott. I appreciate all the work that goes into this. And one of my questions is, and you did address it, which was the contract nursing services. I think that is probably, you know, just a cost that is just draining us. Can you expound a little bit on what processes you're taking at the nursing home to try and lower the amount of time that agency is in the nursing home, because I do know from some of the residents' family members that there's no consistency in continuity of care. So what is MPA doing to try and lower the cost as well as keep employed CNAs more readily available?
I think the main issue is to try to improve our CNA retention, because the turnover, and again, I don't know what the rates are, but my guess is it's going to be at least 40 to 50% on an annual basis, at least. And there's a multitude of factors there. One of them is we need to take a look at our hiring practices. Number two is when they first start working there, we need to make sure that we acclimate them to the facility as efficiently and as comprehensively as possible. And we have an issue, and I've seen this at other facilities, that if you want to call it turf battles, that a lot of the longstanding employees may make it difficult for the new people on the block to be welcomed into the facility. So we're working on that. But also with both the CNAs and with the nurses, we also want to improve their clinical skills, because I believe that 99% of them are there because they want to take care of these residents. And we need to improve their skills to help them do that, especially with the nurses, but also with the CNAs, because the CNAs are with the residents
side by side. So we're starting to work on teaching them to look for signs of changes in their behavior. You know, if all of a sudden they can't get up like they normally do, they need to communicate that. So they need to feel involved in the actual care of the residents instead of just giving baths or getting them to the bathroom, et cetera, et cetera. If we do that and show that, you know, we care about them and what they're doing, hopefully we'll retain the staff. So a lot of it has to do with the leadership, also with our supervisors. We're going to be working with them because we also have to improve their management skills and their clinical skills also. So, I mean, it's almost from a top-down issue where we need to change the culture within the facility.
Thank you. And that's my second question is regarding, I've got three of them, regarding the workman's comp. I do understand, I do know that that the CNAs are not taking their proper precautions. It happens. They're short staffed. They want to try and get things done expeditiously and help the residents. What plans are you putting in place to try and implement more training? And what is it that MPA does specifically for those CNAs so that we'll have fewer workman compensation costs?
You know, at this point, I don't have any specific strategies or answers to that. But what we have not had in place is a safety committee where we take a look at each injury after it's occurred and to determine a root cause. And to see if there are any specific patterns in our injuries. You know, are they all predominantly back injuries with CNAs? And are they because of improper lifts or improper training? Whatever the case is, we need to identify those specific root cause analysis and reasons and then implement a solution to remedy that problem. So at this point, they haven't done that data analysis at all, so I can't tell you exactly what the issues are. But what I do know is that we have a high number of staff that are always out on workers' comp. And it may include also changing our light-duty policy so we can get them back into the building sooner than later. So we're going to take a look at everything from beginning to end. The other thing is the medical management. You know, do we need to seek out other medical providers? I mean, if someone has a back injury and they see a work comp physician, but all they're given is pain pills and bed rest for 2 weeks, that may not be the best solution to get them back to work sooner than later. So we're going to look at all those issues and try to remedy the situation.
Okay, and the third question that I had is relative to the respiratory therapist as well as to the dialysis. You're not budgeting anything for a respiratory therapist in this particular budget at this time, and the dialysis center, is it there a specific line item? I wasn't able to see anything in here maybe, and I did miss it when you were talking about it. Any maintenance issues that are going, you and I had conversation about this, any maintenance issues that will go into effect, because I realize the dialysis center will be responsible for the equipment, but the county is responsible for the guts of the building and the mechanics of it. So there will be and can be a lot more costs that are involved because of the construction, having to tear everything out, then replumbing everything. It's pretty extensive what we're looking at doing. And there will be required maintenance that will go along with those tanks, those filters. So is there any projection for that future maintenance that will have to occur?
Okay, the first question, respiratory therapy. The additional cost is in professional services, physical therapy. And I think it was an increase of, I can't remember what it is, $130,000 or something like that, and I can't remember. But it's included in that budget line item. In terms of dialysis, the estimated capital investment of $300,000 is a cash expense. So it has already been allocated on the current cash balance. That cost has been increased in the depreciation expense of $12,000. In terms of maintenance, I did not consciously increase our maintenance costs or by some factor for maintenance of the new dialysis unit. But it's something that when that program is implemented, we'll have to take a look as we get the RFP fleshing out the details.
Can I just – one more, I promise. In the depreciation expense in on page 7, line item 56, 567.1, that depreciation of the building, the $741,150, is that basically we're depreciating the building, therefore that gives us the working cash that you're looking for?
That depreciation includes the entire cost of the new building plus any equipment that we have. So, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Kibler.
Hi, Scott. So, starting with the main nursing home budget, page 4, line item 3069-30, we're budgeting about $16,000 for non-sufficient fund checking charges. Is this a fairly common practice to do within the county, and how often does it occur that we actually write bad checks?
That line item is a revenue item that we charge.
Oh, this is a revenue. Never
yeah.
mind. That's easy then. Good thing.
So we actually are able to collect late fees from private
Good.
Pay charges.
Good deal. Then 513-5 with the page 5. With a higher regular full-time employee amount, I noticed that unemployment insurance actually drops. Any reason why?
The reason why it didn't drop is I have a bad number on the 2012 projected. Because when I ran the projected numbers, I did not realize that the unemployment insurance cost is capped. So roughly halfway through the year, we stopped paying unemployment. And so basically I doubled the year-to-date number, and I should not have.
Okay.
So if you look at the budget number 135, it is more consistent with the 211 actual, and the original budget item for 2012 was 117. So when I put that 135, I compared it to the 2011 and felt comfortable that I had enough in there.
Okay. I don't want to stop anybody else from going, but
no,
I do several
other.
Just a curiosity question on page 5, 522-10. We're hoping to achieve a higher census amount, but we're lowering our overall food budget. Any particular reason why? Better service provider, I hope.
Our food costs have been creeping up
mm-hmm.
over the last year. So on a when I look at food costs, I look at it on a per resident day basis. So I take the food cost for the month divided by the number of resident days for that month. And right now we are at roughly $6.94 a day. And so that budget number is tied to the increase in census, but it's based on roughly $6 a day, which should be an easily attainable number.
Oh, I was more noticing the projected this year was higher than the budget next year, but we've got a
– Well, that's why, because okay. our costs have been going up.
Okay, fair enough. In nursing home administration budget, we talk about – the one thing I haven't noticed is when the state comes in and we're tagged for things, we're potentially going to get fined for them. Where is that reflected in the administrative side of the budget if we are fined just to have it in our – back pocket in case we are?
There is a specific line item. Let me see if I can find it. Let's see, page 11, 534.75, fines and penalties.
Okay, there it is.
And quite frankly, it's what I call a wag.
Okay.
A wild blank guess. So, obviously, in 2011, it was a bad year for our surveys. And so my hope is that with the improvements that we've been making, that we're not going to see that happen. Now,
mm-hmm.
again, it is basically, you know.
It's a roll of the dice.
It's a roll of the dice.
Yeah.
Because the surveys are so subjective. So hopefully it'll be at 14, but.
My main particular interest is the last time we had a go-around, we had about 13 tags or so, and I've not heard of any fine that's actually been put against the county yet. Has there been, or have they decided not to?
No. All the tags that we had were minor in terms okay. of scope and severity.
Okay. You already answered about the compliance program, where it sits. One of the things I'd like to see in the nursing home administration budget is regarding key performance indicators, specifically around Medicare rankings. Not so much the self-reported, but more of the rankings given by the state or Medicare, because we're currently at 1 star. I'd like to see us get up to 2 star, then 3 star, then 4 star. And I'd like to be that to be part of the budget so that we're monitoring that and keeping that in mind, because when we bring a loved one to the nursing home, that's one of the key things that people look at is that rating. So can that be part of the key performance indicators specifically for administration?
I don't see why not. And it's actually something that I've already had discussions with Karen that we need to address. And the survey portion of the 5-star rating, that's also a 1-star. And obviously the IGs that we got in 2011 is going to haunt us for another couple of years. But the quality measures are also 1-star. And I had that conversation probably 3 months ago, and they have already started working to try to improve those quality measures. And so that's going to take some time, but trust me, it is something that needs to be worked on, because eventually those quality measures, the entire 5-star rating will be tied to our Medicare reimbursement. They already have demonstration programs where you will be dinged or you will get additional reimbursement if you have a high rating. So from a marketing standpoint, it makes sense. But clearly, there's going to be a huge financial motivation to improve the ratings.
I think that underscores then the request. To go along with that, I would love a little bit more from employee satisfaction, as you were alluding to. Quite honestly, I just spoke with our union rep today, and they sing your praises to some extent about when you've come in, it's actually helped with morale and so forth. So actually measuring that and making sure that the employees like working for you, for lack of a better word, would be also very helpful to use.
And now, I didn't pay you to bring up that question, but it's another item that I've already talked with Karen that we need to implement. So we have an employee survey that we've done with our other county nursing homes, and so we're going to be implementing that or some version of that. Because, again, it helps to gauge the issues that the employees have, but it also will be a way that we can evaluate our supervisors. Because we, like I said previously, we do have issues with our managers, but we need to get feedback from employees, because historically they have not felt comfortable in coming to management, and so an employee satisfaction survey provides them with an avenue to be able to do that. So I agree with you 100%.
Okay. I think there are a few other people who have their hands raised, so I'll yield for a while, if that's okay.
Ms. Petrie.
Thank you very much. To underline the request for the slides, if you could work with Ms. Busey and make them available for whoever on the board would find that helpful. Are all the beds at the nursing home available for Medicaid?
No, not 100%, and I don't know off the top of my head. The majority of them are, but I'm going to don't hold me to this, but I believe roughly 50 or so beds are not Medicaid certified.
Okay. The reason I ask is I've been on the state website and found out that the data for all the nursing homes is 2006, so it seems to be a little behind. Okay, I have some sort of page-by-page questions. I notice professional services occur under several of your budgets. Do you mind clarifying for all of us what falls under the professional services listed on page 5? And if I can quickly find, and then on page 10, they are all also a category of professional services is listed. And
what account number is it?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, thank you, Diane.
Right. Okay. On page 5, I believe that's all inclusive of all the professional services in all the departments on page 5.
Oh, so this is a summary number.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
And
so what I mentioned on page 10 is within this number.
Part of it. That's correct.
Correct? Okay. Thank you. And I have them checked here, so I need to go through them. On page 11, 534.75. No, I'm sorry, 534.61. Licensing fee, that seems to have somewhat of a dramatic increase. Could you help us understand why?
That's the new bed tax that was implemented back in April.
Oh, that's part of what you were talking about on the slide.
Okay. Yes.
All right. And then I have two more questions. One has to do with page 13. That's under your environmental services budget. It's 533.30 and 31. And like with paying those bills here at Brookins, they're large. And are there things being put in place to become a little bit more energy efficient to help mitigate those utility costs?
Well, right now I don't have any plans on putting any solar panels, but what we have done is we have a new maintenance director that was hired in, I believe, November, December of 2011. And one of the things that he discovered is that our boilers were not running properly. So we actually had a $23,000 expense earlier this year. We have four boilers. Now, I'm not an expert on this stuff, any stretch of the imagination, so hopefully
but
I get this.
But they were not running efficiently.
But they weren't running efficiently. Okay. I mean, they weren't sequencing at all. Mm-hmm. But in addition, for the boilers, they're looking to try to reduce the boiler temperatures so we reduce our expense, our gas expense. And with our chillers, we're trying to increase the temperature of our chilled water to try to reduce that expense also. So, yes, we are trying to improve our energy efficiencies to try to control those costs.
Okay. I encourage you to even you all to even do more. All right. As I look through the budget, I'm sure I'm missing it, but where is the loan repayment listed in your budget?
That would be under the interest expense. Let's see. On this budget, you got to bear with me.
Okay.
I know the answer to this question.
It's just a uniform loan?
Yes. Thank you, Pius.
At the end of the summary. On page 7.
7?
Very bottom.
Okay, on page 7, the interfund loan, 571.80. There's an expense of 133.596. That's for the interest portion of that loan repayment. So the principal portion, because it's a cash transaction, it actually hits the balance sheet and not the income statement. But because we have a depreciation expense that covers the cost of the entire building, that depreciation expense basically also includes the principal payment. So the depreciation expense is $741,000.
Yeah, almost $800,000.
So, you know, principal payments never match up 100% with depreciation expense, but it's basically buried in there.
Okay, and then my last question is, do you have a rough idea of what percentage of the nursing home budget is for your staff?
I don't have the exact percentage. I'm thinking if I could calculate it quickly. I don't
but
know if I have it.
Just roughly, is it 70%?
It's
80%.
I can tell you it's a high percentage. It's just one of the highest with all our county homes, and it's at least 60, if not 65 or more. I just don't know, but it's a high number.
I'll put approximately. Thank you very much.
Diane.
Thanks. Just a couple things. Back to page 4, if you would, please. Looks like you've adjusted the patient income from adding the 6 or 11 people that we're going to be adding this coming year. I think that's why that goes up. And then fees and fines are up $602,000 as a total. From that, is that what you're thinking that's going to increase by adding those beds, people in those beds?
What's the
I'm looking at the line item total fees and fines, it looks like 345, you know, the top half a dozen, that's where the bulk of the income is coming from. But at the bottom line, the 13,943 versus the 14,545 is about an increase of 602. So you're thinking that's what we'll receive in additional revenue?
Yes. It should not, that line item should not be called fees and fine. That should be basically be, I don't, that's a,
right, yeah, of the whole, yeah, in that group. But that,
so all of the increases total.
Right, but all of the increases are totaling around 602,000. That's what you're,
yes,
expecting.
Yes.
Okay. Then it looks, then we're decreasing staff, 350, which is fine. But we have an increase, once again, on professional services on line 5, and I think we've talked about this a little bit, 533.7, which is the one Patsy alluded to just a minute ago. It's increased by 245,000. Could you kind of give the bulk of what that increase is for professional services? Is that where we're paying that other company to come in and do some of the respiratory therapy? I mean, that's a big jump in fees, and if it's one thing, great.
So there's
533.7 increases by almost 245,000 here.
I think it was back one.
Yeah.
40. Okay. Okay. Under the first bullet, on administration professional services, the administrator's salary, because the administrator was an employee of MPA, that salary was inadvertently included under wages. And so that was moved in this year's budget from wages to professional fees.
Okay.
In addition, the dialysis fees and transporter fees were added to the administrative professional fees. The second to the last bullet,
okay,
physical therapy professional services was increased by 114 for the respiratory,
okay,
therapist.
So part of the down 349,000 in the regular salary employees, the 511, 234, whatever, part of that went down because then the administrative salary went into this professional service. Okay.
Now, the other thing that in professional services is also the our costs for PT, OT, and speech, and that's,
right,
directly tied to Medicare. So because I increased the Medicare volume,
right,
those costs also
go
went
up
in those, addition to the 114 for the respiratory, yes, therapist.
And I'm trying to look at the bigger dollar jumps, not the,
yep,
little $10,000-$20,000 jumps here.
Right.
And then back to what Mr. Kibler said earlier, on page 6, line 534-37, as an expense, it shows $30,000 for finance and bank fees. That's not an income line. That's an expense line. For $30,584, so I think that's where it got a little confusing.
Which, I'm sorry, which page?
Page 6, 534-37. It shows an expense of $30,584 for finance charges and bank fees, not an income.
Right, and that, okay.
I think that's what Mr. Kibler was asking about a little bit ago.
And I can't tell you why it was budgeted for $30,000, because the actual expense in 2011 was $6,100. Our projected for this year is $2,600, and I basically just increased that number by 1%.
Okay. The bottom line in services, which a lot of it comes in that licensing fee and the contract nursing, is it looks like the bottom line in services, I'm showing an increase of almost $581,000. So then when I get over to the expenditure totals, the difference from the original in the budget is almost 1.2 million versus the increases being about 623,000. See what I'm saying? I'm looking at the revenue totals on 4. The difference is around 623,000. And then if I look at the expenditure totals on 7, the difference is about 1.197 million. So that's a huge more expense than income.
And I'll agree with that.
Okay.
Basically, when I put a budget together, I always do it very conservatively, which is I will underestimate revenues,
sure,
and overestimate expenses.
Okay. It's almost twice. Okay. Thanks.
Mr. Carter.
Yeah. I apologize for being late. I had a bummer ride. On page 10, 3699. Other missing
looking at a total.
That's a total for that entire section that goes back to the previous page on the bottom of page 9.
You look at the that's a summation of the things above it, Mr. Carter.
I apologize for being late.
I understand. What's the question again, Mr. Carter?
I'd just like to get that question answered.
Could you repeat the question, please?
Okay.
The 2011 number, I can't tell you what's in that $93,000. It included $58,830 in other miscellaneous revenue, plus donations of $13,000, late charge fees of $16,000. But I don't know what was in that $58,838. But you can see in the budget, I'm only budgeting $36,900, of which other miscellaneous revenue is only $8,600.
Well, to me, that's a whole lot of jing-jing that don't have a name to it.
Well, I think if we really dug into the budget, we could find it, but it just we don't have it here.
Most of the items in that section...
Isn't that part of your operation?
Well, we've got $1,000 for interest, $5,000 in donations, $6,300 in meal tickets, which is employee meals, $16,000 estimated for late charge fee collections, and $8,600 in other miscellaneous revenue. So I've got $8,600 that I can't tell you off the top of my head exactly what's in that number.
Will that include contributions or somewhere else?
It might. I'm not sure.
Okay. That might include contributions also.
Well, it should be listed as something not a miscellaneous if you're part of the business.
Okay. Any other questions, Mr. Carter? Yes? Go ahead. Pardon?
You done?
I'll take that answer.
Okay. Mr. Maxwell.
Good evening, Scott. The dialysis...
A little closer to the mic, please.
The dialysis unit is going to take quite a capital investment. Have we already... Do we have architects, plans, and this sort of thing?
I'm sorry, I can't.
Do we have plans drawn up already, architect?
No, the RFP is going to help flush that out. So basically it's based on a preliminary estimate of $300,000. We don't think it's going to exceed that, but that's basically what we have initially budgeted for.
And it's going to take, because of the size of this, it'll take a contract that we'll have to advertise and all that once we get the plans. So we're looking at using up most of this fiscal year just to get to construction. Is that going to present a problem?
Hopefully it wouldn't. Obviously, I'd like to get it started sooner than later, but it shouldn't be a problem.
Okay. Minimum 6 months. It could be even longer. So I didn't know if that's going to affect your budget or not.
Well, when I did the budget, I... Basically, again, because the revenue assumption to increase the Medicare was, I believe, conservative by increasing it by only 4, that even if we start that program halfway through the year, I still believe the respiratory therapy, which hopefully I'll get started within the next month or two, I'll be able to hit that target of 4 without dialysis.
Okay. The second question I have is, and you helped me quite a bit, but the Alzheimer's unit. You did show us the cost, but we didn't get a notation of the revenue. And I think it would be very handy for us to have that information so that we can determine whether or not this unit is how cost-effective it is, whether or not we're losing, and I shouldn't say losing, whether or not it's the costs are far exceeding the revenue. So I think those are the kind of information that would be helpful, I think, in allowing us to determine which direction the nursing home should go in the future. The other thing is, and you did answer my question by email, but we do have been getting for the last several years a $300,000 payment to the county corporate fund for the $4 million bond. I think you told me where it is in the documentation, but you do say that if we don't take the depreciation expense, then we're going to have a cash balance of around $642,000. But if that $300,000 amount is paid, then our cash will go on down to $342,000. Do we know yet whether that payment is going to be made, or is that something that this board has to determine in the near future?
You know, I can't remember if the payment is made once or twice a year, but I believe I don't recall. I mean, we expense the interest every month, but the actual payment of the principal and the interest, I'm not exactly sure when that's made. I think one of the payments, or the payment, was made in June, but my guess is that there's probably a second payment that occurs later in the year also.
Well, thank you, Scott.
Mr. Alex?
Sorry, I'll try to be brief. Following up on what Mr. Maxwell just asked, where is that accounted for in the budget? Did I hear you say it was part of the depreciation expense line?
The principal is basically included in, would be included in depreciation expense, and what was the in the interest is found. An interest would be on page 7, the transfers to the general corporate fund, line 571.80.
Okay, so the depreciation expense is a combined line item that includes both the principal repayment on the supplemental construction loan, whatever we're calling that, the second bond, and the depreciation on the overall facility, even though that debt service is covered by the account, right?
Right.
Okay. And I was going to ask, Diane, you made a point that I didn't quite follow. Can you restate what you said? But there was a jump in expenses with all the jump, and I was just trying to follow that point.
The revenue and the
expenses. Yeah.
Well, I've been kind of talking to Deb back and forth here too, and I was looking
at the 12 original versus the 13 budget figure. Okay, just bottom line revenue totals and expenditure totals. Bottom line, 12 original versus 13 budget.
Okay,
so then Ms. Busey said I really probably ought to be considering the 12 original versus the 12 projected, what the difference is. And so it still is 299 versus 603.
That's the part I didn't catch. What's 299 and what's?
The difference between 14,997 and 14,698, the 12 original income versus the 12 projected. Okay, so we're actually down, okay? We're up, okay? That's good. And then when you go to the expenses, and I'm looking at this kind of in a raw form. I'm not taking depreciation in because depreciation is not a cash item.
Okay.
And I'm just kind of straight up looking at the numbers there, and then I just subtracted them up and tried to figure out what the bottom line deficit was going to be.
Okay, I see where you are. Thank you.
And then if we don't have that other opportunity to gain income, how far really is the difference.
Okay, thank you. I understand what you're asking now.
Thanks.
Are you done, Mr. Alex?
Yes.
Okay, Ms. Brookson?
Sorry.
Microphone.
When I, for some reason, find myself among groups of old ladies and the question of nursing homes comes up, and these are Medicare and private pay patients. They're what you want. The quality of the food is distinctly a factor in deciding where they're going to go. So I would suggest that your economies in the food not become counterproductive.
I agree with you 100%. And we do have issues that we're addressing with dietary. I mean, the costs are high, but you can still provide the same quality or better quality at a more reasonable cost. I believe at that level, at $6.94 or $7 a day, there's a lot of waste in there. So we're not going to make any changes that's going to decrease the quality of the food. But we have in place, just 2 weeks ago, have implemented committees to take a look at the entire dining experience because it is an area that we need to improve on.
Jim?
Following up on the food, are we still having committees where the patients or clients themselves have some input into that too? I knew we were, but I hadn't thought about it. Good.
Okay, Stephanie?
Okay, I just have a few more. Scott, did you pay for the, is it in here in this budget regarding the state certification for the dialysis center? And if so, where is it at? And do you know what the cost is going to be? And then the duration, the time frame of from beginning to end when you'll be able to get the dialysis center certified with the state?
Ask that second question again.
When do you think, what time frame? Because I know working with the state, it takes a lot of time with any addition to a nursing home, assisted living, whatever the case is. Time frame, what are we looking at in getting an approval through the state?
I know that number is in there somewhere, but I don't know what that is off the top of my head.
In the budget somewhere in licensing?
The time frame is not in the budget, but I know that's something that Mike has talked about. I just don't know what that number is in terms of the time frame to get approval. I know it was included in his time frame analysis. And what was the first question?
Cost. Is there an application cost? And if so, and then to keep up the licensing. So that's going to be included.
I believe that's included in that $300,000 estimate of capital expenditures.
Okay, thank you. Also, I just noticed a difference in that there was a zero budgeted for, and I wasn't quite sure, for the private insurance patients. Is that correct? So you're not anticipating any long-term care insured residents moving into the nursing home?
No, when I did this, I put all the private pay revenue into line 34522.
34522 on page 4.
On page 4, yes.
Yes, thank you. Okay. And then also on page 4, 36350, the restricted donations. Can you explain the restricted donations, the difference? You've got, of course, 13,473, and then the figures have changed to the budgeted $5,000. What is that, and why is that figure changed from so drastic? Well, it's not drastic, but it's still a change.
I can't tell you why it's changed. I'm just going to assume. I didn't look into that specific line item. So.
Is that an auxiliary?
Maybe, you know, people donate specifically for the bird aviary or something like that. I don't know. I didn't look in detail on that line item. I basically just took a look at that number, and I said, conservatively, I'll just throw in $5,000. That's basically what I did.
Okay. And then one more thing. On page 5, I want to talk about the food just for a second, 522.10. I think it was a great idea to increase those food costs because, of course, we're going to see probably a huge increase in the cost. I just want to make sure that you've increased it enough because based on what's happening with all of the crops, the predictors are saying that those food prices are going to go up exponentially. So are you sure you've put in enough for the food cost for the projected increase in trucking and all the labor and everything else that's involved?
I may not have. Okay. We'll have to see. I mean, I don't think anyone knows exactly how much food prices are going up. But what I do know is that what we're spending now is more than we should be. So did I take into account any significant increases in food costs in the current year? No, I didn't. But overall, when I put the budget together, I'm always underestimating revenues and overestimating expenses. So if I'm off on any particular line item, hopefully I'm not off on 100% of them, that I got enough wiggle room that I'm going to be able to cover all my expenses. And hopefully I'm going to keep the census up or even more than what I'm targeting, especially with Medicare, so that at the end of the year we're good to go.
And then part of that is also portion control to help with the extra food that you said you're throwing away. Are you doing those
well,
processes?
The main thing is we need to portion out exactly what's necessary. I mean, the state really regulates that, you know, for certain items you have to use a certain spoon. So that's always been an issue because, you know, if we have to serve 6 ounces of protein, you know, a particular resident may have never eaten, you know, a piece of hamburger that's this big but may only eat this much. But we're required by state regulations that we have to serve them a bigger portion. And so that's an ongoing battle that we're having with all our homes in the state. So, you know, half of this stuff is going into the trash can. If they're not going to eat this, why can't we serve them lower portions? But getting the regulators to understand that has been difficult.
Thank you.
Mr. J.
Scott, I understand why you have this dialysis in your budget, because if, in fact, it would come to fruition, you'd have to have some way to fund it. But I wouldn't want anybody to read this budget thinking that we've approved this dialysis program.
I agree. Thank you. Agree.
Mr. Kibler?
Specifically on the nursing home medical services under Alzheimer's 081462, with Alzheimer's.
Page number?
It's later on.
31, I think. Is it 31?
Long story short, with staff turnover and with the amount that's changing in our information and knowledge of Alzheimer's, period, I would like to see more in terms of 533-95 conferences and training, especially to our CNAs and LPNs and RNs. I think that that number is really low for what we need to be providing to our staff. For Alzheimer's specifically. So I'd like to see that up if possible.
And I would agree with you that, in general, the way that the training has worked with the Alzheimer's unit is a train-the-trainer program, which is our Alzheimer's director. So our director goes out, gets training, you know, and I'm not exactly sure. I mean, with our other facilities, it's through the Alzheimer's Association. But the director gets trained, and then she, in turn, trains the employees. That's how it typically works so that we can control the cost. But I agree with you. I mean, with Alzheimer's, you never have enough training to take care of those residents. So,
okay. And the last question I have is with respect to the KPIs that you've maintained over the past few years. Several of them haven't been performing. Like you'll say that you want at least a 4 out of 5 or a 4.5 out of 5, and you've been under for the past 2 or 3 years. So if you can, maybe not today, but just provide some level of what you're going to be doing to increase your overall KPIs in those measures, I'd appreciate it.
Any other questions? The motion to accept and place on file? Moved by Mr. Kibler, second by Ms. Langenheim. Discussion on whatever it was. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Scott.
Thank you, everyone.
Next up is Public Safety Sales Tax Fund.
Okay, we're starting on page 32 of the book for tonight with the blue cover. The first few pages is the Public Safety Sales Tax Fund summary. There are actually five department budgets in the Public Safety Sales Tax Fund, but this summary gives you an overview of the entire fund. So the quarter cent public safety sales tax is the primary source of revenue for the fund. And the sales tax revenue is budgeted at a 2.5% increase over the fiscal year 2012 projected revenues. And currently, fiscal year 2012 is coming in at 3.5% above fiscal 2011. $112,993 is budgeted in the Justice Technology Department budget in the sales tax fund. That is for software maintenance on the JANO and New World software programs that run the criminal justice system. I would tell you that both of those maintenance agreements end November 30th, and we're in the process of negotiating the new agreements. This number does include a small percentage increase. I didn't want to put too much in there because this will soon be a public document, and if we're still negotiating, So that number could change is all I'm saying. We have $69,384 budgeted to be transferred to Capital Asset Replacement Fund for technology replacement for the criminal justice system offices. And I will talk about that more in the Capital Asset Replacement Fund summary in a little bit. $228,380 is budgeted as the 5% for revenue designated for delinquency programming. This funding, starting in 2010, was frozen at a flat amount when we were cutting general corporate fund budgets in 2010 and 2011. So it has been at $203,116. What I did do for fiscal year 2013 is restore it to the 5% level. You may certainly tell me to change that, but it seemed like it was doable, so it seemed like we should go back to that original commitment, which is budgeting at what we project will be this year's public safety sales tax revenue, 5% to be spent next year. That's how we've always done it. Whatever we received in the preceding year, 5% is then spent on that initiative in the ensuing year. So that's there. $825,000 is budgeted for a transfer to the general corporate fund to offset utilities costs of the public safety buildings. You saw this last night in the physical plant budget. This is a decrease of $114,909 over what it was this year. I originally had wanted to decrease this by about $225,000 in fiscal year 2013, but the overall general corporate fund is still problematic, so I downsized it some. The other thing, though, is last night we had a communication glitch between the IT director and me. He had in his budget, he said there was a $50,000 reimbursement from public safety sales tax for an employee in his department, and actually I stopped that with 2013. So it's not budgeted in public safety, and it was removed from general corporate today, which is why you have a new general corporate fund summary sheet at your desk tonight. So that change was made. Again, you tell me, but I believe we need to wean the general corporate fund off of some of these additional revenues from public safety sales tax that we did in the last 3 years. Because of the declining revenues in general corporate, we used public safety to help diminish the level of cuts that we had to make in general corporate. But I think we need to back off of those reimbursements from public safety to general corporate. So that's what's been done there. There's $3.3 million budgeted for debt service on bonds in public safety at this point. And right now, public safety in 2013 is revenue positive by the amount of
$123,240. James, Mr. James.
Well, on that item 4 on page 32, Deb, you said you increased that roughly $25,000. I think you said to go back to where it was before. What was the money being used for when it had dropped? Where did you put it?
We froze it at $203,000, which is what it was in fiscal year 2009. Uh-huh. So in 2010, when we were cutting General Corp, rather than giving it, and basically the sales tax revenues were declining, we did not increase it, and okay. It stayed frozen there.
Okay. Well, I guess, too, I would ask, and I may be off base here, with the SAMHSA grant and everything they're doing with these other groups, that basically this fund serves, because is there three or four that are now getting part of that?
Two. On what Mr. Tracy said.
Okay. Couldn't that money, at this point in time, since there is other monies that are coming in from the feds and everything else, couldn't that money be better used if we left it where it was at the 2003 for other things such as upgrades or computer stuff? You know, we're always crunching on capital stuff, and I think that fund at this point in time, because what I heard last night, we maybe need some new computer items and some upgrades and what have you, and I would much rather see that line item be used to pull from for that.
That is your direction. All I'm doing is reinstating what the original resolution
right.
regarding public safety said, and you could change that. It's up to the board.
But when would we do that, at the full board?
Well, all of these presentations are not intended to be decision-making, but that is something that certainly in September, at the Finance Committee of the Whole in September, we need to make decisions about all of this budget information that you've been presented with. So if that were something that, you wanted to do, I think a vote at Finance at the September meeting would be necessary in order to provide the direction to make that change.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Petrie.
Maybe some extra information would help Mr. James, because this money is divvied out on a grant basis, and a lot of it's going to Don Moyers, and so is some of that money from Access Initiatives. So that might help us balance out if his suggestion has merit.
Right, and quite frankly, there is these intertwine. Right. So a change here will have an impact on the Mental Health Board and their decisions about funding to agencies.
Yeah. Right. Right. And then I have a question on number two. You indicated to us that you're in negotiation on this maintenance program. Is that something that just gets renewed every 2 or 3 years or whatever?
Yeah, it's basically, they're generally 3-year contracts.
I see.
The sheriff negotiates the New World contract. And the agreement will, you know, eventually come to the board for approval. And the circuit, the presiding judge and the circuit clerk, who pay a majority of the JANO maintenance out of courts automation, are negotiating that one.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Alex.
Two questions. First, just to confirm, the $3.3 million for debt service on the courthouse and the juvenile detention center bonds, that's non-discretionary, right? That's a fixed amount every year?
That's right. That's okay. Required.
And the, I guess maybe a question for Mr. Betts, actually. I am struggling with the same terminology issue that he raised the other night, which is the difference between delinquency prevention grant and the juvenile justice post-detention mission of the quarter cent for public safety sales tax. My understanding is that the authorizing language for the quarter cent public safety sales tax specifically refers to post-detention juvenile programs and nothing else. Is that accurate?
Microphone.
Nay.
Go ahead.
I think the emphasis was that the emphasis something to that effect on post-detention. It does not exclude prevention, but it is to have primary emphasis on post-detention.
We can change the title.
Well,
I think that would be useful.
It's less a question of changing the title than it is of following the original intent of the public safety.
I think we also need to find out what the money is actually used for, too. It says, well, the Don Moore's Club.
Right, because that goes to the question that Jay asked about the whether services being provided through the Access Initiative grant were, you know, duplicative or supplemental to the services being provided under this. And one factor that would come into that decision is, my understanding is that the Access Initiative is dealing primarily with prevention programs, and this is dealing primarily with post-detention programs. But if that is inaccurate, I'd like someone to tell me.
I agree with you on the Access Initiative. I think it is primarily focused on prevention. My concern is Access Initiative. The SAMHSA grant is going to run out relatively soon, and it's going to have to transition to other forms of funding. I'm not as confident as Peter Tracy is that there's going to be the equivalent of the $9 million split 4 ways per year. But I think that the court system, and I can be real careful here, is more comfortable with the quarter cent, 5% set aside money and how it is being used than they are with the SAMHSA system, quite frankly. And that is, I'm being real careful because I'm in the court system every day, but this is a gut feeling I have, is that our $200,000 may be right now more effective than the millions.
And with regard to post-detention, I would encourage you to make sure and look at page 38, number one, which talks about the primary focus of juveniles who are being targeted with this programming, and they are juveniles who have been at the juvenile detention center.
That's what I was reading from.
Yeah. So I think they are post-detention. So if we have simply inappropriately named the title of this budget, we can change it.
Ms. Betts, go ahead. Yeah. We'll get you, Jan. Don't worry.
That is kind of the little dispute I was having with Peter Tracy the other night, and he took it quite differently because he knows that this is something that I very have strong feelings about because we worked very hard to get that 5% set aside as a condition of the quarter cent going through, and we wanted it to be post-detentional. I also know that historically there's been some money there used for station adjustments, and which is in lieu of detention, which and then they follow through mm-hmm. with station adjustment, mm-hmm. which I consider, in effect, post-detention. Mm-hmm. That's my mm-hmm. own personal view. I don't know whether it's the view of the board, but I think it's been very, very effective as a means of funding something like that because it prevents youth from being in the system long-term and potentially impacts recidivism rates. I'm still waiting to see some really solid, legitimate recidivism numbers, but, you know, that'll be, I'll read it in the newspaper in a couple of years, I think. But I would like to see this not called the juvenile detention prevention. I think we should have the name so that we always keep focus on what its purpose was.
And that's as easy as you telling me to just change the name to post-detention programming grants, because
I would urge you to do it.
Just do it.
Okay. Right on us. Ms. Anderson.
I had a little trouble hearing all that Tom had said, but in listening to the other night, I know that when we had this under the Justice Committee and we, you know, all of our, practically all of our applications were prevention, mm-hmm. and we didn't all have the expertise to know how to get those applications out, and it was a real move, I think, positive move to put that under the Mental Health Board. And maybe the naming is wrong, and I would have no objection to that, but I think in them doing this application process and spelling out exactly the types of programs, then the request that came in really fits what we were hoping to do so much better. And an example would be, I mean, right now, that's going through the Boys and Moyers program, but when it was under Justice, it was just, you know, kind of given to Boys and Girls, and then they did it for right. their general program. Right. Now it's spelled out that the kind of program that they have to do, and staff is out every few months visiting the agencies, checking to see if they're following through on the type of programming that they've applied for. And it is a much better process. So changing the name. Mm-hmm. And Tom, can I ask Tom a question? Are you saying that station adjustments would not fit this?
No,
I think that it really does keep people out of the juvenile. Okay. Well, I said I had trouble hearing you, so I was hoping that was not what you had said, because I think now we have all of the, it started out with Champaign particularly using the station adjustments, and through the various people in the justice program besides Julia, state's attorney, I think now we have all of the various police departments around the county really feeding into that, and it has progressed very well.
Tom,
just for the record, Jen, I was saying that the station adjustment is logically part of post-detention because they're being detained at the station, and then we're finding an alternative to putting them directly into a lockdown facility, and we've got the follow-through, et cetera. So I personally see that as a very valid and legitimate use for the quarter cent money that we've set aside. I happen to think we've been very, very effective with $203,000. It may be the most effective use of youth money that we have anywhere in the whole county, and I include within that, unfortunately, so far, the SAMHSA.
Okay, Jen?
And if I could just add, the Mental Health Board has added monies to that program, too, because they do see it as being very effective and
and a part of what their direction is, too.
Further questions? Mr. Kibler.
Hi, just a general thought or statement personally. We have a nice fund balance here for the public safety tax fund that we have to maintain at least $4.1 million. We do have an overage. I'm not a big fan of debt. I mean, if we can try to put more towards the principal just to reduce down our interest expense, just try to get that down as much as possible. At least that's my overall feeling. So I don't know what others feel, but maybe reduce down our fund balance to what we have to and pay off our debt.
That is something to consider. However, you have to be really careful because the money's ebb and flow. And when you see the fund balance, it's what's projected on November 30th. We must have $4.1 million in the bank in March or we can't abate the property tax. So because it's all projected, I think having a couple $100,000 cushion there is probably not a bad idea. If we began to have and when you look at the long-term projection for public safety, in 6 or 7 years, if there aren't any major changes, you begin fund balances that get to the $1 million mark, and it's at that point I think you could give very serious consideration to prepaying some of the principal.
Very fair. Thank you.
All right. Further questions? Seeing none, is there a motion to accept
present cost? Can wait till the end.
Oh, yeah, we'll go down the list. Good idea.
Okay, the next fund is the GIS fund, and that begins on page 41. On Monday, you received a presentation from RPC staff about the GIS Consortium, which is a joint venture of numerous government entities in Champaign County, the City of Champaign, Urbana, villages of Rantoul, Mahomet, and Savoy, the University of Illinois, and the county. Because when we started doing GIS, we thought a consortium would be more effective if we built one GIS system countywide that served the needs of all of those governmental entities. But as it is, the county has the primary source of revenue for that consortium because we have the recording fee here in the county that is paid by all the residents of the county, the residents from all of the participating municipalities and entities which are in the consortium. So effectively, the revenue right now is projected at about $275,000. It has been as high as $350,000 in the boom years in 07 and 08. It dropped back down in 09 and 10, and it seems to be stabilizing in about the 255 to 275 range. So we're budgeting at 275 at this point. The expenditures are spelled out, and it's basically $7,500 for mapping software licensing for the county clerk and supervisor of assessments offices, $258,987 to the GIS consortium, and $10,700 for a special project for county EMA that is to be completed in fiscal 2013, and that has to do with countywide addressing, which will benefit METCAD, all of the first responders. So this is where we use this fund, and what you see happening basically is we're paying most of the money from this fund into the GIS consortium.
Questions? All right,
okay, the next section is debt service and capital project budgets. The first debt service fund is the nursing home debt service fund, which is backed by the property tax. A separate property tax levy is approved by the voters, and it's fairly straightforward. We levy what we need to pay the bonds. We have basically refunded the original nursing home bonds, and you can see the debt service schedule on page 44. We did one refunding in 2005 and another refunding in 2011. Those bonds will be completely paid off in 2022. The next is the highway facility debt service fund, and this fund is basically shared obligation of the highway fund and the general corporate fund for the part of the fleet maintenance facility that was not paid for with motor fuel tax funds. We issued bonds for that. The county pays a portion of it because we have our fleet maintenance taken care of for all of our vehicles in the fleet maintenance building, and then the highway fund pays the other portion of it. is fairly simple. It will be paid off in 2017. Public safety sales tax fund debt service. This is obviously the largest chunk of debt that the county currently has, and this is from the original courthouse construction, juvenile detention center construction, and I would encourage you to remember that this fund also paid off approximately $8 million in jail debt service from 1999 through we retired that debt in 2010. So it hasn't just paid for the courthouse. It also paid off the satellite jail debt service because those bonds were issued in 1995, and from 1999 on, instead of being paid with property tax, they were paid with public safety sales tax. The summary of those debt service schedules you will see is on page 48. And again, we have done refundings on some of those in 2005. I have frequently been asked about the 8.25% interest rate on some of those bonds. And those are bonds that are non-callable. They are premium bonds. The 8.25% coupon bonds had yields of approximately 5.4% when we issued them in 1999 and generate a $1.7 million premium. We needed the premium to pay capitalized interest on bonds of $1.5 million. We needed to generate that premium because we did not want to reduce the amount of the proceeds from the bonds that we needed for the construction project. In 1999, 8.25% didn't seem so as absolutely ridiculously horrible as it seems today, but it's basically that's why that interest rate is there. They're non-callable, and they cannot be refunded. I mean, they have to stay as they are. The next is the ERI debt service, which is in the IMRF fund. And Yahoo, next year is the last year we have to budget for principal and interest payments on that. The final payment will be made on January 1st, 2014. If anybody ever comes to you and says, we should do an early retirement incentive, say no. This ERI was done in 2003, and 11 years later, we'll have it paid off. So don't do it. Yeah, the employees are going to beg you, but don't do it. And then the general corporate fund debt service, which is where we have the $4 million construction bonds that we had to issue for the nursing home project. And this is also where we pay the general corporate fund's share of the highway facility bonds. The 1 cent sales tax was pledged for the $4 million bonds. So you see on page 51 that revenue is reserved in this fund. At $309,888, we pledged a portion of the quarter cent sales tax for the highway facility bonds to be paid out of general corporate, and that amount is $94,891. You will also see the revenue from the nursing home, $303,596, as a transfer in. So basically, this department budget has double revenue because we have to set aside the 1 cent for the repayment of the $4 million bonds for the construction. But in fact, the 1 cent ends up staying in the general corporate fund, actually ends up getting used for other general corporate fund expenses because the transfer comes in to cover the debt and interest payment on the $4 million bonds. So you see this fund has $708,000 in revenue and $398,000 in expenditure.
Mr. Maxwell.
Are we going to collect that $300,000 from the nursing home this year again?
Yes. This will be the third year in a row.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's it for debt service.
Questions? Any other questions? Okay, move on.
Mr. Betts?
No.
How many years did we pay on the jail out of quarter set?
11.
11 years.
Mm-hmm.
And we used quarter set. Part of the highway?
That's a different quarter cent. That's not public safety.
Okay.
That's a general county quarter cent.
Okay. I just hope members of the board remember
that.
Well, when people are saying to you at the podium how much you still owe on the courthouse from the, I just want you to remember that that is not the only debt service that you've paid out of the public safety sales tax fund.
And I guess my point is it has been used for jails right from day one.
Yeah, that was part of what the voters knew.
And new board members, so that's the only reason I'm being paid.
Okay.
Further comments? All right, go ahead.
All right, Courts Construction Fund. We use this fund, if you look on page 55, has a projected remaining fund balance at the end of fiscal 2012 in the amount of $858,000. This is money that was left in this construction fund after we had completed all of the exterior renovation project and the original construction that was done out of this fund. This money, there are one of two things that can be done with this money. This $850,000 that is sitting in this fund is really there because this fund received donations from citizens for the clock and bell tower project, and we issued debt. They donated $1 million. We issued debt of $1 million. That, you know, was because we had to do the project and they hadn't raised all the funds yet. I believe the money that is left in the fund, this $850,000, is a result of the proceeds of those donations. So there's two things you can do with it. You can move it to the Public Safety Sales Tax Fund and make some prepayments or pay some of the debt service. Or, as you all know, we have been completely unable to budget for maintenance of our facilities. We already know there is a facilities plan that we have for the courthouse that would require exterior maintenance to be done next year. It's a 5-year mark, and we know that that is supposed to be done next year, and we know that it needs to be done next year. So in the alternative, if we leave this $850,000 in the court's construction fund, we can at least take care of this building, the courthouse building, in terms of the required maintenance to maintain it, obviously until the money runs out, which would be, I believe, for several years. So that's not a decision you have to make tonight. I just wanted you to be aware of it. I have actually included a budget for it in fiscal year 2013 of $125,000. That's a rough estimate of what that exterior maintenance that should be done next year will cost.
Mr. Jay.
Well, I like that idea, Deb, but, and I know Stan James does too, even if he doesn't say that tonight, but I know he'll like it. But I'd like it identified. I'd like that money identified if we're going to keep it.
You can only spend it on the courthouse.
That's what I'm saying. I want that identified for not for new construction, not for pictures or sidewalks. Or I want it to be for restoration or fixing or maintenance. Period.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Quisenberry.
Would I be right in remembering that this is the fund that we went to for updating the
This did the courthouse sound and video this year. This is what
so
we
that
used.
That was new but necessary.
Right. Well, actually, it was a replacement.
Okay.
So that was like maintenance. Okay, it was right. Replacement of something right. That was put in the building when the building was built.
So it was very convenient to have that available when there was a failure of an existing system.
Yes.
Mr. Carter.
Well, my heart aches because I don't know how in the world we go and celebrate a completion of a building and it's not. That is the most, I feel terrible about that. And how in the world that segment of that building got out of that contract, nobody knows. Now we went on there to celebrate, nice, for it to be finished. And it wasn't. And nobody here today explained that.
I believe it was finished.
Huh?
It was finished when you had the opening.
Well, why is it people donating to put a bell on something that's supposed to have been in the package when we gave that to the contractor? Come on, Deb. I'm a contractor. I know.
And I know what was said here in this chamber when we was talking to those contractors. It's not finished. And you're still talking about money to put into it. Now, how can you say it's finished when you keep working on it? It's ridiculous. It is ridiculous.
Other questions, comments? Mr. Kibler.
I know I never get an answer, but that's... But as we say, it's something don't sound right.
Mr. Kibler.
Yes, I just noticed that it's under furnishing / office equipment, the $125,000. Perhaps we can move that to a different line item just to make it more reasonable that's going to go to maintenance as opposed to furnishings.
Yeah, it's a capital line item, and that was just the first one. It's just a whole. It's a placeholder right now.
Any other questions? We know Mr. James has spoken for already, so I guess that's it, right?
Thank you.
Okay.
That works well, Mr. J, by the way.
I can make my notes simple.
All right, next.
The Highway Facility Construction Fund actually has not had any action since the facility opened, but the construction fund remains in existence. There is a $155,000 fund balance. There is one issue with one contractor and one lien that has been with legal for 2 years, and that's why we can't close this out. But at some point, we'll close it out. And that money should legitimately go back to motor fuel tax because that's where that money came from. The 202 Art Bartel Construction Fund, as you know, we're hoping to finish that out this year. So there's nothing budgeted out of this fund at this point for next year. If we don't manage to finish everything, we would add this hopefully before you adopt the tentative budget in October. But at this point, we believe we should be able to finish out this construction project this year.
Ms. Petrie.
In finishing out this construction project, does that going to deplete the
It means the monies would all be spent.
All gone.
Right.
Oh, Mr. Quisenberry.
Sorry, I'm going to go back one. I'm curious. The Highway Facility Construction Fund,
mm-hmm.
when we are able to retire that and move that money back, can it go to retiring the remaining debt on the building construction?
No, because this was motor fuel tax money, and you can't mix the use. Yeah. If it had been used for the other portion of the building, we would be able to. Okay. Then on page 60, we have the IMRF fund summary. This is the fund where we pay for all the IMRF for all employees. The rates for IMRF for fiscal year 2013 were modest increases, 2.3% in the regular rate, 2.1% in the SLEP rate, which goes from 20.91 to 21.35. And a 2% increase in the elected county officials rate. And this is basically a slightly revenue positive budget. The property tax to cover the corporate fund share of IMRF is $3.2 million. The balance of the monies come from the outside special revenue funds and enterprise fund, which pay into IMRF their share of the IMRF costs for their employees.
Questions?
I noticed that this is funded by the corporate personal property replacement tax in part.
Yes.
And that is, we're taking a hit on that.
$124,000. The first $124,000 of it goes into IMRF, and I asked the previous chief deputy auditor, because that's been that way since corporate personal property tax was created, if there was any way to change that, and she said she didn't think so, that was something legislative at the time that they created that tax, that that first amount of revenue had to go to IMRF.
What I was looking for, the delay in my asking the question, was the number, was the expected actual number for corporate personal property replacement tax this year. It's more than $124,000.
Oh yeah, it's 800 something.
Okay.
The balance of it is in the general county budget. We'll go over that. Yeah.
Okay, so there's enough to cover this, and the rest goes in the general.
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
Yes.
Mr. James, Mr. James has a question. Do you want to speak for him?
No, go ahead and let
him. Mr. James, go ahead.
On the pilot tax, Deb, I know you've explained this to me before, but that's all the entities that pay a pilot tax, and then it's broken down by percentage into what fund it goes to. You've got it down here on revenue.
The which tax?
Pilot, payment in lieu of taxes.
Oh, payment in lieu of taxes, that is just...
315.
We never budget for it. We never know what it's going to be. It randomly comes in and through the property tax cycle. The treasurer collects it. And
do you know how much approximately a year he collects off of that tax?
Total, no. I mean, obviously, the portion that was attributable to the IMRF tax levy last year was 1856, but it's not consistent, which is why we don't budget for it.
Thanks. I know when I worked for the housing authority, they paid it.
Microphone.
It's a payment in lieu of taxes. You have to talk to the treasurer.
Further questions?
All right, next.
Social Security fund summary, and this is fairly straightforward. It's a total 2.36% increase in the property tax for fiscal 2013, which reflects the fact that our overall wages have increased 2% in fiscal 2013. And the property tax goes up just a little bit to $1.58 million from $1.46 million. And again, this is presented as a balanced budget, and there is a fund balance in the Social Security fund.
Any questions?
Okay, page 64, the tort immunity tax. All right. The Tort Immunity Fund is a property tax-based revenue fund, and it is the source of funding for General Corporate's share of self-funded insurance. To determine what General Corporate should pay into self-funded insurance each year, we use an actuarial study. We'll actually be doing a new study next year, but the study that we've used for the last 3 years has indicated that we should put more into self-funded from General Corporate than we could possibly afford with the property tax, which is capped, and we can't grow to the level that the actuarial study says it should be. So I've been telling you this every year. I know that. You see the graph on page 64. What you see is what the revenue and expenditure from tort immunity has been each year since 2007. And each year the expenditure has been more than the revenue. So what you're also seeing is the cumulative effect on the fund balance of this fund. So the difference in revenue and expenditure is not $1.6 million this year. It's closer to $400,000, $300,000. But since 2007, the cumulative effect of the decrease in fund balance on tort immunity is $1.6 million. So that seems to be a grave concern. But if you look at self-funded insurance, which is where the money from tort immunity feeds to, you'll see that self-funded insurance, the graph on page 65, revenue has exceeded expenditure every year, which basically means our experience has been better than the actuarial studies have shown, and so we haven't had to pay out as much as what the actuarials expected that we would pay out. So over that same time period from 2007 to 2013, the self-funded insurance fund balance has increased by $3 million, $3,025,000. When you put them together, the net impact, and that's the bottom graph on page 65, is that when you combine self-funded and tort immunity, actually, revenue has exceeded expenditure every year, and we have actually increased the fund balance net by $1.3 million. So they're in a combined fund. I've been very concerned about this because I really believe the revenue should match the expenditure when we adopt the budget, but it is virtually impossible. We've tried to give priority to this property tax when we can over the past few years, but it's too big. We would have to give, like, all of the growth allowed for General Corporate to tort immunity in order to balance this, and we would only then be further increasing the self-funded insurance fund balance. So I wanted you all to be aware of this and understand this. I think it will be interesting to see our actuarial numbers next year, and perhaps we can get closer to the property tax revenue matching what our, you know, expected expenditure should be. I didn't want you to be overly concerned because the bottom line is between the two funds, we still have, if you look on page 70, the fund balance for self-funded is basically $3.8 million. The fund balance for tort immunity is a negative 1.6, but that's still a positive $2.1 million fund balance for self-funded, and the goal is to be at $1.5 million. So we're ahead of our fund balance goal even in light of this situation. So
this is just a question to help me educate myself on these funds. Is there any limit by state statute that would inhibit us in any way of blending these funds, or is that something that's just decided by the county to be able to do this balancing act that you just explained to us?
It's allowed because they're in joint funds, and we are basically paying from tort immunity to self-funded, but we're using self-funded money to put in tort immunity to pay to self-funded.
So
there's nothing that bars us from doing that.
Money, in other words.
Right, right.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
Self-funded is where we pay for workers' comp, unemployment, and property liability, claims and insurance for the entire county. So if there are any questions about either tort immunity or self-funded, I'd be happy to answer them. Nope. Okay. Courthouse Museum Fund is on page 71. That is a very special fund. It has a very low fund balance and not much activity, but it exists, so we keep it there. And finally, the Solid Waste Management Fund on page 72. Again, this was originally created way back when we had ISWDA. This is what's left. Basically, we license waste haulers who, transport waste in the county. That's the only revenue, and it's anticipated to be about $1,700. We do pay for some recycling programs. Basically, they come to you as recommendations from the county planner and RPC, who is the designated solid waste coordinator for the county, and she uses this budget to participate in basically community-wide recycling events or anything else, and it generally comes to you for approval before it actually gets done. The fund balance in this fund is, $64,000, and basically it'll just go down and down and down until it's gone or until we only spend $7,900 a year.
Just a final clarification question. All these funds that you have just reviewed for us are basically dedicated funds.
These are all special revenue funds?
Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, so going back to last night's book, and administrative services is the very last tab in the book. We just have a few budgets that we still haven't gone over. The first one is the county board budget. The revenues are fairly stable. We are seeing a slight increase in liquor and entertainment licenses and a slight decrease in cable TV franchise payments. They basically just about counterbalance. The revenue in 2013 is about $2,000 less than it was in 2012 originally. The rest of the budget speaks for itself. You might ask why per diems hasn't changed. Per diems are going up on December 1st, but there's fewer board members. So this projects still 3 meetings per month on average for each board member, and the $48,000 budget should still work. You do have budgeted in 53303 attorney legal services about two-thirds of the way down the page, $14,000 this year, and that is for the intergovernmental agreement you engaged in regarding the Clinton landfill. I don't know if all that money will be expended this year. If it's not, we would need to come back and re-encumber it in December. I have not received an update yet about what we expect will have been spent this year.
Let's go with Mr. Quisenberry.
And that's a not-to-exceed amount.
That's right? Correct. And it may not take that amount, but we have to meet the obligation, and I'm not sure we'll get it all done this year.
Mr. James.
Just a quick comment. I'm just going to say now that I see that liquor and TV are paying my salary, I can retire. Thank you.
Mr. McGinty.
Deb, where would we potentially draw if we wanted to hire outside help to serve as parliamentarian for the next board? Because Julia doesn't want to do it, and it's never comfortable any other way. I've always thought that we should have somebody here all the time as a parliamentarian, and we should get around to damn well hiring it if we can't do it right ourselves. And I think that's been the case for quite a few years now. So for the next board, if it's going to operate with any sense of order, that a parliamentarian would help, where would that be in this budget, I would assume?
It would be in the county board budget, and I assume it would be in the attorney fees line item, because I assume you would hire an attorney.
My encouragement would be to budget accordingly for that and then realize a savings if that doesn't happen. I'd encourage the next board to consider that, please.
Mr. Quisenberry,
I'm curious how much Mr. Best would charge to come back.
Yeah,
and be
I was going
to
say the same.
I don't think he can pay him enough. Mr. Carter, did you have a question?
What's your hourly fee, Tom?
Mr. Best.
I have an exclusive contract with the University of Illinois, and I am not permitted to take any attorney fees or any other entity than the University of Illinois.
It sounds like he will volunteer to do it. Any questions about this? Ms. Petrie.
I have a couple of clarification questions, as usual. There's quite a budget here for required travel. That's for what purpose?
To reimburse per diems for county board members.
Oh, it's that part of the travel. Okay. And then the dues and licenses.
Okay. UCCI, NACO, IACBMC, Regional Planning Commission, Champaign County Chamber of Commerce, EDC.
Okay.
I think that's it.
I got it. Okay. I got it.
And
what?
CVB is separate.
Mr. Kibler.
Good question. So we had talked about when I first started on the board that we may want to reorganize the room and whatnot. Is that coming out of this budget or a particular other budget? Like, has that been thought about in terms of reorganizing?
I think you're going to talk about that next Tuesday at County Facilities.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Mr. Batts?
We don't have anything there for county board members getting extra education by going to NACO and sending a few members, and I know it's never going to happen again, but as a final hurrah, I think it's one of the most valuable things that county board members can do is go to a NACO conference and go to the special sessions on zoning, on budgeting, on zero-based budgeting. They have 4 days of very intense work, and you come back a much more informed, much more capable board member. I believe in continuing legal education and continuing county board education. I've lost this issue for years and years, but this is my final term, so I'm throwing it in there again. I think the board would be wise to send folks to NACO. I know that many people years ago did go, and they came back much better board members.
Mm-hmm. Would you like me to find out where NACO is next year? And, you know, you can certainly direct that line item be increased in September.
I think you should. I mean, what I recall is Mr. Shields, who we named this room for, was part of NACO for years, was on the executive board. He put Champaign County on the map in terms of getting information and what have you. It was very, very valuable, and I'm sad that we haven't had the money or the will to do that.
Mr. Maxwell.
I'd like to add a little more to that. I've gone to both NACO and NACE over the years, and do remember when I would see some Champaign folks there. So I think if we can afford it, it'd probably be good to send some representatives. Thank you.
It's perfect to send Florida, Orlando.
What time of the year?
In July.
It's June 4th through 7th.
No hurricanes. Any other questions, comments about this? It's part of the budget. All right.
Okay, page 163 is the administrative services budget. It's very similar to what it was in 2012. Total revenues are down 3% because we are anticipating a decrease in vending machine revenue. And otherwise, the expenditure budget remains stable.
Can you explain the vending machine revenue trend? Are
yes.
people eating less crap?
No, I can explain the vending machine revenue. In our last go-around with vending machines, we allowed ILEAS to keep their vending machine revenue for their operations, okay. and they used to come into the general fund, and it seemed only fair. Right. So that's why we lost some money.
Ms. Pitcher?
Fair.
When we have liability,
that's our thing.
Go ahead.
When we have liability issues with a nursing home, which budget does that tend to fall under, the nursing home budget?
Well, self-funded insurance would cover liability for a nursing home.
Okay.
And it would impact their future premium costs if it hits under our umbrella amount.
Okay, I wasn't sure if it was that self-funded or if it nursing home budget. Okay. And then the second one is I notice copying costs are postage, UPS, Federal Express. That's pretty high.
In administrative services?
Yes, page 164, it's line 522.6.
Right, $234,500, and that's why we try to keep telling the county board you should go to completely electronic.
Oh, so thank you for that lead-in, because
no,
I ran...
that's not it.
I ran that data.
We pay postage for the entire general corporate fund out of administrative services. It's a centralized service. So when the supervisor of assessment sends out 65,000 notices and when the county clerk sends out, that's what it is.
Okay. Okay. But leading into that nice comment you just made, Where is the copying cost for all the papers that we get?
It's also a centralized service. It's in the physical plant. It's in the IT services budget, and it's $185,000 for all of the general corporate fund.
Oh, so we don't know what the subset is, so I can make my argument that it's time.
Yeah, sorry. Okay. Those are two centralized services just because there's so much efficiency in many respects by handling it that way.
Mr. Alex.
To follow up on, make sure I understood Ms. Petrie's comment about the nursing home liability coverage. The claims are paid out of the self-funded insurance fund, but the nursing home does pay into that.
Oh, absolutely.
That is a line item that's reflected in the nursing home's budget,
yes.
right?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
All right.
Okay. On page 169 is the Champaign County Extension Education budget. This is actually supported by a property tax levy. The Extension Education requested no increase this year. I told them about the guidelines of the County Board for General Corporate Fund Departments because this is a General Corporate Fund Department. But because of the downsizing that they have recently gone through statewide, they have fewer staff than they used to have and requested that they just be allowed to keep the same levy and same expenditure budget for fiscal 2013 as they had for fiscal 2012. So that's what is presented to you. Regional Office of Education, we did last night. Now, page 175. You have not approved this, so don't get too concerned. This is the Veterans Assistance Commission budget, but we expect it is coming. It will be before finance in September. The Veterans Assistance Commission Committee of the County Board has already approved this. This is a budget that we negotiated and worked on with the Veterans Assistance Commission representatives. Mr. Langenheim chaired that committee. And so this is, I went ahead and created the budget to include it so you have a good understanding of where the overall general corporate fund is. So you will be looking at this in finance in September, as I said. Basically, it is a superintendent, and the big expenses are for a superintendent full-time at $40,500, and then assistance to veterans in the amount of $80,000, which is a number that they provided based on veteran population in this community and comparable communities and the amounts of assistance that are provided. You're going to see a lot of documentation about this in terms of the bylaws for the VAC and how these monies would be distributed, but we did want to go ahead and get it in the budget. You'll also see there's a budget for $9,850 projected for fiscal 2012. Again, those are startup costs. They need a software system to run their operation, so we're recommending that that be purchased yet this year so that it is here and online when they open on December 1st, if, in fact, you all approve what the subcommittee is forwarding to finance as a recommendation. So this can be changed if you don't end up approving it.
Mr. Maxwell?
My understanding, this has its own levy, and
only if we go to the voters.
That's optional.
We can do that.
So because we have tax caps.
So it would be within the tax caps.
We would have to go to the voters to levy the levy.
And it's allowed at 3 cents otherwise?
I don't remember.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
One more question, Deb. If they don't give out the complete $80,000 in assistance to veterans, is that what happens to the remaining money?
It's in general corporate.
Okay. So
it would be unspent.
Okay.
It would go back in the fund balance. All right. General County. Okay, this is your big budget where all the basically revenue that isn't specific to fees or specific to department operations in the general corporate fund comes into the general corporate fund. So in the revenue analysis, fiscal 2013 is budgeted with a 5% increase over fiscal 2012 for the property tax. Basically, the actual increase allowed under PTEL is 4.19%, which would have been $330,019 for general corporate. However, IMRF and Social Security did not require the full property tax extension limitation law growth, so therefore we transferred that additional $70,000 in levy authority to the general corporate fund so that the total increase is about $400,000. The CPI this year is 3%. The EAV remained basically flat. The reason it goes to 4% is because there was also new construction in fiscal year 2012. Other revenues, the 1 cent sales tax is budgeted at basically flat, a 0.5% increase over fiscal 2012 because that's how it is performing this year. The quarter cent sales tax is budgeted at a 2.5% increase over anticipated for 2012. The income tax is also budgeted at a 2.5% increase over anticipated 2012. The state eliminated inheritance tax for us in July. So that's a loss of about $250,000 to $300,000 annual revenue to the general corporate fund. Yeah. And they also cut corporate personal property replacement tax, which was an additional $50,000 decrease in 2013 for the general corporate fund. So that's the revenue overview. On the expenditure side, out of this budget, you pay $76,000 for the outside auditor contract. I budgeted $5,000 for attorney's fees. We had a budget this year for attorney's fees because we were using outside counsel for the labor contracts. It just seemed wise to include some number in here for attorney's fees because things can happen, and that way you have some budget at least. $36,000 is for soil and water conservation, which is consistent with what they received last year. $24,500 for the Urbana-Free Library Archive, which I think Mr. Quisenberry alluded to last night. This is the only money the Urbana Library receives from the county at this point, and they do a monumental amount of work in terms of what they do in their archive. It's huge. This is an increase of $2,000 over last year. They came up with that following the guidelines about personnel increases. They had had some staffing changes and personnel increases in the archive, and that was the basis for their request for this $2,000 increase.
I would just like to remind everyone, I think that payment started out at $15,000 about, I don't know, 15 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and it had not increased up until about 2007.
Mm-hmm.
So
we tried to reinstate it to the percentage of the operation of the archive that it had been when we first started, and then we hit 2009, 2010. I have the documentation of what it would be if it were still back at that original percentage because they provide that to me. I didn't bring it with me tonight, but it would be a much higher number than this $24,500.
So I would continue to point out that the circuit clerk should start budgeting for some of the documents that she sends over there.
And the current circuit clerk will not, but I will certainly, and you all may too as well, have that conversation with the next circuit clerk. Mr. Alex.
Deb, I wanted, although I never miss a chance to complain about Springfield, I did want to talk a little bit about the inheritance tax. And it was $328,000 last year, but it was $32,000 in 2011.
That's because they suspended payment in 2011. Our average over the last 10 years has been about $250,000.
Okay, so they decided just to...
They just didn't pay it.
Rather than pretending they were going to pay it.
Like when they didn't pay us income tax, they just didn't pay us.
It was a warning to let us know to take it.
Shot across the bow. All right, thank you.
Mr. Just a quick question, Deb. Regarding the City of Urbana 336-2, what's caused them to go from 105 down to 22.9 for this year? And where's that? What's that revenue from, I should say?
It's from the Fringe Development Agreement, and they made their last payment last year. It's from the sales tax sharing. There were Fringe Development Agreements that the county entered into in the early to mid-90s with both cities, and that also led to the Fringe Road Agreements. Basically, the cities were both annexing properties that had previously been in the county, which means the county then loses its sales tax revenue from those businesses. And so to appease that, the cities agreed to continue paying to the county for the next 10 years the amount the county had received in the last year that it was in the county, or whatever the sales tax earnings were, whichever was less. So we received that for 10 years, and we just, I believe, received the last payment for Farm and Fleet this past year, and that's why that's going down. At the same time the cities did that, the county agreed to put motor fuel tax or highway money towards fringe road development, and that's how Prospect Avenue was done and some of those roads. Windsor, right. Lincoln, North Cunningham. Okay. The other expenditures from this fund include a grant to Senior Services, which is an RPC, which remains flat, a grant to Children First Program, which remains flat. We budget for the fees on the General Corporate Fund debt service here. There's $123,278 to the Capital Asset Replacement Fund for general corporate capital needs. That's a transfer. $33,500 for the county's special assessment for the Scottswood Drainage Project. Number 10 on page 178, $2.7 million for health insurance. We're still working on that. We're still negotiating. We just had a meeting yesterday, and we have another meeting with the Health Insurance Committee next Tuesday. I'm hopeful that we will be able to land on the actual renewal number next Tuesday and then better able to fine-tune this number. This anticipates a 10% increase in the health insurance. Hopefully we will do better than that. And then $72,000 transfer to the highway fund to reimburse for the salary and fringe benefits costs, less IMRF, for the highway mechanic who works on general corporate fleet vehicles, which has saved us overall in automobile maintenance. So that's an overall view of the general county budget. At this point, I guess I could take you to the document that I passed out tonight, the overall general corporate fund summary. At this point, with all of the budgets that have been presented to you in, the total revenue is $32,496,745. Total expenditure, $32,682,912, for a deficit of $186,167. That's less than 1% on a $32 million budget, so that's not a bad point from which to start. Yeah?
Does that include all of the requests that have been made? Especially
that includes all of the line item justifications that you saw in the budgets. That does not include a single program change request.
All right, thank you.
And those will be compiled for you to look at with this. I can tell you that I am going to bring one recommendation back to you with regard to fees revenue for general corporate fund, and that is for marriage licenses. By statute, marriage licenses can be set at $75, and last year you raised them to $30. If you raise them to $75, that's about another $50,000 to $60,000 for the general corporate fund. So I believe that's a good idea, so you will see that at the September finance meeting, and then you can decide. Okay, on page 182, I think this is it, is the capital asset replacement fund summary. Mr. James asked about this last night of the coroner. We actually do have a very comprehensive budget set up for vehicle replacement, technology replacement, furnishings replacement, of items that belong to the general corporate fund departments. As many of you recall, we've had this in place for about 10 years. It works well when it can be funded, but we haven't been able to fund it for the last 3 years, 4 years, and 2013 is no exception. You heard me tell you tonight that we have $123,000 budgeted from General County to transfer to capital asset replacement, and $69,000 from public safety sales tax to capital asset replacement. In order to fully fund the items in capital asset replacement, the amount for general corporate would have to be $285,561 more than the $123,000 that's going in. And from public safety sales tax, it would be $103,000 more than what is going in. So what this means is the only thing we're transferring to capital asset replacement is what the difference is between what is in reserve and what is required to purchase the items that need to be replaced in 2013. So we're staying current, but we're doing nothing to invest towards the future reserve of items that will need to be replaced in years 2014 and beyond. And basically, the graph on page 182 shows you that we have basically, at the end of 2013, will be to a point where our fund balance is we're going to have to probably budget much more because there is no reserve for the things that will have to be replaced in 2014 and beyond. The fund balance in this fund for it to be viable should be at $1 million, and it's going to drop down to about $500,000. So that is a shortfall in the general corporate budget and really in the public safety sales tax budget, where we are not fully funded in ongoing obligations, and I just want you to be aware of that.
Mr. Curtis.
I know we've been here for 11, 12 hours, but I want to congratulate the staff. This is a big job, tough job, and I can only say that being only 100 and some odd thousand off on our budget is pretty darn good in today's environment and economics that are going on around our state and around the country. So I just want to give my thanks to the staff on the work that they put in here. Thank you very much, Tim.
Thank you.
Ms. Patrick.
Yes, it's a fabulous job. It's a, based on what you say, 1% shouldn't rock the boat. However, there are items that haven't been covered, did you add those in as just in case so we'd have some idea of what it could potentially be in the differential?
I'm sorry, I don't think I understand your question.
Well, some of those requests for...
The program change requests?
Program change, the monies for the dialysis and then the nursing
Well, this is all just general corporate fund. We have to treat each fund individually.
Okay.
So this deficit is just the general corporate fund deficit.
All right. Thank you.
I would love an omnibus motion to accept, place on file all of the budgets we discussed today.
Second.
Mr. Best, second by Mr. Kurtz. Discussion. Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries.
I would just like to say one thing. I think that this last three nights has been the most diligent review of budgets by the county board that I have ever seen. I cannot tell you how much I appreciate it. I think it's an extremely valuable process. And so if there's any recommendations you have, please share them, especially if you won't be here next year, so that we can incorporate them. But I do think what we did this time by committing three nights and by having as many of you come as have been here, It is literally the best budget review I've ever seen done by the county board. It has produced a lot of good results in the process that I think we'll be moving forward with a budget that is better put together. So thank you.
Mr. James.
Quick question. I know I spoke about this way because I thought everybody would be here and have the input, but you prefer this over the way we did it last year where we broke up in small committees and met with different club heads.
You know what I would love to do is both.
Yeah.
I would love to have each of you sit in and review at an in-depth on an in-depth basis, but the problem is this was you have no idea how difficult it was to get all of this compiled in time to get it to you 2 days before you're going to start reviewing it. I don't know how we would have fit in a week-long cycle of individual meetings, but I would like to consider it because I do think that that helps all of you understand better how the whole process works, too, to really analyze it at a nitty-gritty level.
I would say next year make sure that some of the department heads are available so if we have questions. There's
well,
a few here. I know it's tough, but
it's our one chance.
I know.
Any other questions, comments? Okay, we're adjourned.